Harihi Om. Sahana Vavatu, Sahanao Bhunaktu, Sahaviryan Karavavahai, Tejasvi Navadhi Tamastuma Vidvishavahai. Om Shanti Shanti Shantihi. Om Jaya Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shiva Sari Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Continuing Mahabharata, now chapter 33, Jayadratha kidnaps Draupadi. About a month after the incident with Durvasa, the Pandavas were out hunting again. They had left Draupadi at the hermitage under Domya's care. While they were gone, the king of Sindhu, Jayadratha, passed that way while traveling to Salva's kingdom. Seated on a royal chariot, he came to the outskirts of the Pandavas' ashram and saw Draupadi gathering flowers. The king at once fell in love. The beautiful Draupadi, her dark complexion framed by bluish curls, shed luster on the woodlands. As she bent over to gather the wild forest flowers, Jayadratha was captivated. He said to his son, Kotika, go and ask this lady her name. Find out if she is an apsara or a daughter of some god. Jayadratha was on his way to marry King Shalva's daughter. But upon seeing Draupadi, he lost all interest in that other princess. No woman could ever match the beauty of this forest lady. Go, Kotika, and find out why this lady loiters in the forest full of wild beasts and thorns. She will have me as her lord, then I will consider my life successful. The prince jumped down from the chariot. As a jackal approaches a tigress, he went up to Draupadi and asked, Fair one, who are you and who stands here leaning on the branch of a kadamba tree, looking like a brilliant flame? Why do you feel no fear in the forest? Are you a goddess or the daughter of a celestial? Perhaps you are the wife of a Lokapala. Tell me, gentle lady, who and whose you are, what is your race, and why are you here? So, because the general thing is that there's rules then also, means he's going to get married, Jayadratha, and that, not that they can't have other wives other than Kshatriya princesses, but they must have, depending upon if it's the first marriage or that, it depends upon where they are. But how, so they want to know what the position is. At the same time as you have that Draupadi, then by her beauty, because technically she is the goddess of fortune, meaning Indra's wife, and the Pandavas, you know, they're Indras, and so she's going to have that celestial beauty, just like they have that same kind of celestial beauty. So he'll be, you know, naturally captivated, because just the standard of beauty as you go up in the planets becomes more and more. So then he's thinking, well, he'll marry this girl. You know, of course, then, you know, Shalva is not going to take very kindly to that. But at this point, he's just overwhelmed with desire. So he's not really thinking about the particular political consequences and everything like that. And also then, she's very confident. So that means, so either she's some kind of goddess or her husbands are very powerful. Something is there that she feels very confident. So they want to find that out. Main thing what they're trying to do is by asking all these polite questions is find out if she's unmarried and therefore available. The prince introduced himself and then, pointing to his father, said, That one there, shining like a sacrificial fire, is the king of Sindhu. Surrounded by powerful kings, he is traveling at the head of 6,000 chariots and many elephants, horsemen, and infantry. Like Indra amid the Maruts, he is journeying amid his friends. He is gazing upon you, O thin-waisted one. So then at the same time as after respecting her and showing, asking her position, then naturally then he wants to impress the girl with the particular qualities and prowess of his father. And so then, you know, who he is, his position, how he's surrounded by other Kshatriyas means he must be a good king because he's supported by these others. And then how many chariots and elephants and everything are there, because you only have to mention the chariots the chariots, and then from that you count everything else because they go in a proportion. For one chariot, then you have, you know, one elephant, you'll have this many horses, you'll have this many infantry, so you don't have to go through and mention everything. You just have to mention what the top is. Draupadi stepped back and pulled her cloth over her head. Oh, prince, it is not proper for me to speak to you here. The ordinance dictates that a woman should never be alone with any man other than her husband. Under the circumstances, however, I will tell you who I am. I am the daughter of King Drupada and the wife of the five heroic Pandava brothers. My husbands are now out hunting, but they will return soon. You should tell your father to dismount from his chariot and wait for them. Yudhishthir is fond of guests and will doubtlessly offer you a fitting reception. Right, so he hasn't mentioned, he's just saying he's gazing upon you, but he didn't take it any farther. She's already said, no, I'm already, you know, it's improper, not married, but, you know, since he's traveling this way, then he can stop, he can be our guest and everything. Yudhishthir's fond of guests because they're living in the forest, and any great personalities come by, he always likes them to come because then you can discuss many, you know, very special things about the different, the histories, the shastras, and the philosophy, and what's, you know, currently going on in the world and all that. Because the Puranic knowledge means you understand what's going on from the beginning of creation up to what's happening in present day. That much you should know. And then shastras also tell what's happening in the future. But you yourself should have studied the scriptures, know the past, and also know what's going on in the present. Otherwise, you know, if you're in a political position, what's the point if you don't know what the other kings are doing, what their positions are, their natures, and everything that's going on. Draupadi turned and walked back towards her cottage, leaving Kotika standing by the kadamba tree. Kotika then returned to his father and told him what she had said. Unconcerned to hear of her marital status, the king replied, "Why have you returned unsuccessful? I must have that woman, right? But she's married. He doesn't seem to care, just so much desire. Now that I have seen her, all of the women seem to me like monkeys. My mind was entranced the moment I saw that princess." "You will have to take her by force, dear father. She will surely not come willingly," right? Because she already said she's not supposed to be talking and has her husbands and that. So they didn't seem to very clearly understand what's going on. Dryadratha got down from his chariot and went with his son and several of the kings towards the pond of his hermitage. Like a pack of wolves entering a lion's den, they went into the ashram and saw Draupadi standing there. In a silky voice, Jayadratha said, "Is all well with you and your husbands, O queen?" Draupadi answered that everything was well, then said, "Is all well with your kingdom, treasury, and armies?" Right? So, because the point is the kingdom's going well, I mean, it's managed properly, the citizens are happy, and things aren't. The treasury, that he has enough money so he can maintain and see that the governance goes well. And the armies, because without them, then how do you maintain the peace? Because much of the time, kings will not bother you because they know you have a good army. And so they'll stay in their boundaries because you have. So it's a deterrent like that. Plus, then the army, you're maintaining all those different people, that is their occupation. And if there is some difficulty in all that, then they're ready there to fight. So these three things must be in proper order. "Then are you justly ruling the prosperous countries of Sindhu, Sauvira, and all others brought under your sway?" Right. So are you justly dealing with them, you know, according to the codes given in Manu? "Yudhishthir will soon return and offer you refreshments. For now, please accept this water to wash your feet and be pleased to wait for my husbands." Draupadi pointed towards several large pitchers of water standing by her cottage. Jayadratha smiled. "All is well with us, O fair-faced one, but we have no interest in food and water." He stared at Draupadi as he continued to speak. "I wish to take you with us. Why do you remain attached to Kunti's wretched sons? They have lost all their prosperity and are forced to dwell in the forest. A woman of good sense does not devote herself to a fallen husband. Your husbands have fallen from their dignity and have lost everything. You need not share the Pandava's miseries. Oh, you of beautiful hips, renouncing them, become my wife and share with me the kingdom of Sindhu and Sauvira." So he says a fallen husband, that means someone who's not properly practicing their duties, has fallen from that, is not, you know, showing any signs of coming back to the position. And so there, she doesn't have, means the husband and wife are of equal nature, right? It means like a Brahmin marries a Brahmin, Kshatriya Vaishyavite, like this. And so if they're not, so whatever is the position, he has duties to perform, but if he stops doing those duties and takes up something of an unfortunate position, then technically then she doesn't have to spend her time with him. She might go back to her father and spend her time there. Generally, they wouldn't get married again. But here he's presenting it that they've lost their kingdom, that they're fallen from their position, but they're still properly performing their Kshatriya duties. So they in no way are in a fallen position. In fact, they're much more elevated by their living with the Brahmins, serving the Brahmins. They went on all those pilgrimages. Arjuna has also now gone to the heavenly planets and come back. So they are, you could say, by piety, way better than probably any other king that is ruling at the time. But he, you know, being a materialist like Duryodhana and others, then they simply see you have money, you have the power, you're in the position, then that's now you're a proper Kshatriya. But if somehow or another there's misfortune has fallen and you're not performing duties with that capacity, then you're in a fallen position. They don't take it that the Shastra means fallen by consciousness, by mentality. So they're in very elevated consciousness and mentality. But these persons, because of their externality, they take it that it means, fallen means you're not in a wealthy and powerful position. Draupadi frowned and retreated a few steps. She felt pain to hear Jayadratha's speech. "Are you not ashamed to speak in this way?" she retorted. "How dare you address me thus?" Right? Because you're talking about Dharma. So her point is don't you feel bad to be speaking against religious principles? You know, here? Draupadi's face flushed and eyes turned crimson. Her voice rose in an angry shout. "You fool, how dare you insult the illustrious Pandavas, each of whom is like Indra himself? They all abide by their duties and never waver in battle, even with the celestials," right? He probably doesn't know that about the previous pastime where Duryodhana and Karna and everybody got defeated by the Gandharvas and Arjuna alone then saved them, because that's not something they're going to talk about. You know, the wise never criticize men who practice devout penances, even if they are impoverished, right? Just because they're poor, but if they're doing their penances, they're doing their duties nicely and everything, no one would criticize that. Not a wise person. A fool might. Only dogs speak like that. I do not see anyone here who can save you from the pit you have dug under your own feet. By expecting to defeat the pious Yudhishthir, you hope to separate with a stick a Himalayan elephant from his herd. Out of childishness, you are rousing a sleeping mountain lion to pluck a hair from its face. You will have to flee with all speed when you see the furious Bhima. When Arjuna returns, you will not know which way to turn. You're inviting these two heroes to an encounter is like a fool trampling on the tails of two enraged and venomous cobras. As a bamboo bears fruit only to perish, or as a crab conceives only to die, so shall you meet your end when you lay your hands upon me. Jayadratha laughed, enchanted by the sight of the furious Draupadi. "I know all this, O Panchali," he replied derisively. "You cannot frighten me with your threats. I am born in a royal line endowed with opulence and power. I consider the Pandavas inferior. Therefore, mount my chariot and come with me. Do not speak so boastfully." Right? But he's dealing with her as if he's in control and it's his right to deal. And so he's saying, don't be so boastful. Get in the chariot, like I said. But the point is no, she's someone else's wife. He is not in a position to say that. So she was not speaking boastfully. She was speaking the reality of what will happen. But because of pride and because of desire, then he is unable to see things in the correct light. His intelligence is covered. Draupadi was horrified. "Why does this fool take me to be powerless?" she cried. "Even Indra could not abduct me. Even if he tried, Arjuna and Krishna, riding upon the same chariot, would follow and destroy him. What then of a weak human? O king, when Arjuna releases his deadly arrows, You will see your entire force destroyed as dry grass is consumed by fire. Beholding Bhima rushing at you with his upraised mace, and the twins ranging on all sides, vomiting forth their anger, you will then be sorry, as I have never proven false to my husbands, even in my thoughts. So those men will destroy you. I do not fear you, wretch. Draupadi looked away from Draidrata. He knew that by her own ascetic power, she could reduce him to ashes, but she did not want to be drawn to violence by Draidrata. Her husbands would deal with him soon enough. Right, so many times you see in these great personalities, they themselves, because of anger, don't want to show their power. Though, even though they have the power to destroy, they don't. You know, because here, her husbands are there. We saw earlier then with the story with Nala and Damayanti. So Damayanti, she was out. She also had that kind of that chastity like this. And so when after the, I think it was the hunter had saved her, but at the same time he became attracted, then by her chastity, then she destroyed him. And then she left like this. But there was no other shelter. But here her husbands are there, so they'll take care. Jayadratha stepped forward and seized the princess by her arm. She cried out, "Do not pollute me by your touch," and called out for Donya. Jayadratha took hold of her upper garment, but she pushed him back with such force that he fell to the ground. Jayadratha sprang back to his feet, his face flushed with anger, right, because he's been pushed down by a woman, right? He grabbed Draupadi and dragged her to his chariot. Domila suddenly appeared and rebuked Jayadratha. "You cannot seize this lady without defeating the Pandavas, O king. You should observe the Kshatriya's ancient customs. Truly you will reap the results of this wicked act when the heroic Pandavas return." Jayadratha ignored Domya. He placed Draupadi on his chariot and sped away, followed by his army. Domya entered among the king's troops and stayed close behind, continuously reprimanding him with strong words. The Pandavas were some distance from the ashram. As they went through the dense forest, Yudhishthira began noticing inauspicious signs. He said, "Do you see how these birds and animals flee towards the sun and pass excrement? This indicates that enemies have invaded the forest. Let us return to the ashram. My heart seems to be aching for some reason, and my mind is clouded. The five brothers immediately started back. As they raced through the trees and bushes with their weapons flying behind them, they saw a jackal yelling hideously. Yudhishthira became still more concerned and urged them on. Suddenly they burst into the clearing where they camped. There on the ground they saw Dattatreyika, Draupadi's maid, weeping loudly. The Pandavas' ever-present servant and charioteer Indrasena dismounted and went over to her. "Why do you weep? I hope no ill has befallen the Princess Draupadi. Could anyone have been fool enough to snatch away that incomparable beautiful lady? Dharma's son has become so anxious that he is ready to go after her even if she has entered the earth, soared to the heavens, or gone to the bottom of the sea. Who today will fall to the earth with his body pierced and torn by arrows? Do not weep, gentle girl, for Panchali will come back this day and be reunited with her lords." Rubbing her face, the maid said, "Disregarding her five Indra-like husbands, Jayadratha has carried Draupadi away by force. See there the trail left by that wretch and his followers. It happened not long ago. He cannot have gone very far." Yes. Okay, so we'll stop here and then see what do the Pandavas do. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai Shri Prabhupada.